Heterodorks. Heterodox dorks.
Hey, TERFs and trannies. My name is Corinna Cohn, and my co-host is...
You're so confused.
Nina Paley?
Yeah.
She's so shy today.
Corinna couldn't remember my name. He just was sitting there. Who's my co-host? He was hoping I would answer for him.
It could be anybody. Could be anybody at any time.
Well, my name is Nina Paley, and I am Corinna's co-host, and we have a special guest dork today. Her name is Saya
Hillman. Welcome to Heterodorks.
Thank you. Thanks for pronouncing my name correctly. I've had 44 years of correcting folks, so I appreciate that.
Just so you know, listeners, we have video feed that we can see, even though we're only recording audio. And Saya's name has her pronunciation in parentheses next to her name. So it's S-A-Y-A, and then it says parentheses, Sai, like, eh, Sai, and parentheses. And it is so refreshing to see that on a screen name instead of pronouns.
And I've learned over the years, one of the things that's most important to me is removing life's awkward moments, and people not knowing how to say your name is one of the most awkward. I don't care, but other people, the people who mispronounce my name, care. So I try everything I can do to remove that awkwardness.
So we have we had a listener who was one of our original four or five listeners, and after we made episode after episode after episode, grew our audience and grew it up to 9 listeners. She was still one of the 9 listeners. And sometime, and she would provide the best sort of feedback and reviews for our episodes. And about a year ago, pretty close to a year ago, the feedback that she would provide us just sort of stopped out of nowhere. And I wrote a couple emails trying to figure out what was going on, and I didn't get any emails back. But her name is Debbie Hillman. She was an activist in Illinois, very involved in the building local communities, improving food infrastructure locally, improving banking and other types of economic access locally. And then I found out just a couple of months ago that she had a prolonged illness and passed away in the spring, if I remember correctly. So first of all, I'm sorry about the loss of your mama.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's definitely I'm learning what the term grief comes in waves means, because it's a weird thing. You can forget, and then all of a sudden there's a smell, there's a sound, there's something that reminds you that, oh yeah, I don't have a mother anymore.
Nina and I have both lost our fathers, so we are all experienced with losing a parent, at least. So the way that I found out about you, Saya, is that I was going around trying to learn more about your mom, and I saw this wonderful tribute video that you had made. Was it made after her passing? It was a little ambiguous to me.
There were two videos on it. Which was it, the story that I wrote about her, or was it just like the slideshow?
It was the story.
A story. Okay. Yeah. So the story, she was actually in the audience when I wrote that. So that was a few years ago. That was my Mother's Day. My Mother's Day gift to her was to write that story about her. And she was treated like a rock star afterwards. Everybody wanted to come up and meet her after hearing about her unusual life's journey. So I think it was one of the best Mother's Day presents I've ever given her.
Well, for our audience who may have known her through interactions on Twitter or in person, but for the vast majority who haven't, because I think what is double of 9 is 18, so at least half of the people probably. Can you tell us a little bit about her?
Sure. So her name's Debbie, and yeah, she passed away in March, a few days before her 72nd birthday. I don't even know where to start. Debbie Lynn Hillman, the elevator pitch for her. Just a very unusual, do it my own way, regardless of what everybody else does type of person. I self-employed, I'm an entrepreneur, and I definitely owe 99% of all of my entrepreneurialness to her, my I don't care what society thinksness to her. She was one of four sisters, and she was definitely the one that carved her own path and did things. All the other sisters stayed local for college. She went out to New York, and then she moved to India, and she married an Indian guy and sold Indian brass on the streets of New York, and then somehow made her way to Hawaii, TMI, but Hawaii, Lahaina, actually, where the fire just happened. That was where I was conceived. And she decided that Hawaii was not her place. So she's a single mom. And it was interesting. I'm biracial. My dad is black. I've never met my father, but dad is black. Mom is white. And so my whole mom shtick, my whole thing growing up was, why are you trying to ruin my life? I hate you. Mm-hmm. And the reasons I hated her were things like, she gave me organic peanut butter instead of Skippy peanut butter, and she didn't let me have TV dinners, and we didn't have a car, and we biked everywhere. And when she took me to the grocery store, she made us bring our own bags. It was so mortifying. And who brings their own bags to the grocery store? On and on and on. So she was very, and she did this weird thing called yoga where you contort your, you know, she was very ahead of her time. So I guess the not so short answer is that just Debbie was her own person and a very independent thinker, and a person who had many wonderful qualities, but also, if we're going to be honest, was also very difficult to live with as well. And so unfortunately, the last few years of her life, we actually had an estranged relationship and just reconnected a few months before she passed. So this is why I am writing a book.
Yeah, moms can be a pain.
Moms are challenging. I have lived with my own mom for the last 11 years. And she just moved on Monday.
How was the 11 years?
It was challenging and difficult. And yet, I have been unable to live with anyone else for 11 years. So as difficult as that is, it was a relationship that was possible. I guess other people, I just leave. But you can't really leave your mom. I mean, I avoided her for a long time. I avoided my whole family for a long time for legitimate reasons. But yeah, it's difficult.
Families are complicated. And one of the things that's been a silver lining of not just my mom passing, but just the tumultuousness of our relationship at the end was that I'm a big believer of transparency and being vulnerable. And yes, my life is wonderful in a lot of ways, but I also like to show the not so wonderful things. And one of the silver linings has been me feeling that I was the only one who had a complicated relationship with my mom. And turns out, absolutely not. I am not an anomaly, that most of us have complicated relationships with family members. And it just made me feel so much less alone and so much like a whore. I mean, when you say things like, I don't love my mother, you know, you feel like a horrible person. And my eulogy, which I almost scrapped the morning of her memorial, much of it was about the fabulousness of her. And much of it was about, I shared petals and thorns, roses and thorns. I shared the thorns. And I was like, oh, but in eulogies, you're not supposed to share the thorns. And I'm really glad that I did. And from the response I got from folks, it seems like they were glad as well. And for that same reason of just, yeah, being honest and knowing that you're not the only person who's got complicatedness when it comes to
things. Wow. You're an only child, right? Yeah. So I had a not good relationship with my father. And when my father died, the memorial was like, he was the best guy ever. And all these people showed up and he was just so beloved in the community. And I have a brother and sister and they just had wonderful things to say about him. And I just zipped it because I was completely outnumbered and what's the point? But apparently my father walked on water to a lot of people. And I was just like, it's amazing. This is the same person.
Well, he walked on water. That's not a very good Jew.
No, it's a very Jewish thing to do.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. When my father died in 2000. I, like you, Saya, I don't know that I thought of it as roses and thorns, but I had a lot of regret about our relationship because my father was somebody who, he was 60 years old when I was conceived, I think, or born. 60 when I was born? 59 when I was born. So a huge age difference. And I just never really had any sort of close relationship with him. And I had to say that at his memorial. And I'm glad that I did. It was really something that I feel like when you're processing grief, at least this is my experience, right? You can't know anybody else's experience very well. But I had to try to move what was inside of my heart in front of me and say it for other people to hear, because at the very least, that puts it outside of yourself. And sometimes that's necessary, because if you just keep everything inside, it's like knives.
It festers. It definitely did. What was the reaction afterwards?
You know, it's 23 years ago. It's very difficult for me to remember a lot of the specifics. This is absolutely horrible, but probably the most poignant memory of that time is me having a fight with my sister because she wanted to add to the memorial soundtrack, "My Heart Will Go On." And I just had to absolutely put my foot down and say no.
Yeah, I can understand. I'm on team no there.
I was very surprised by the waves of grief when my father died, because I thought, like, I didn't even like him. So why is this happening? Like, why am I bursting into tears in a restaurant? Like, I need to eat. I'd just be like, I'm hungry. I was living in New York City at the time. And it's like, okay, finally I get to eat. And then it's like, nope, bursting into tears, can't eat anything. And I was like, what even is this?
For you two that are pretty far removed from the death, do you still get those? Are the waves still there? Do they still come up?
No, not for me. And interestingly, I occasionally have dreams about my dad, and he's absolutely benign in these dreams. Like, for someone that had such a fraught relationship with her dad, it's a relief. He's not, or he's just benign.
I, maybe 5 or 6 years after my father passed, I think is probably the last time that I had an episode where I just sat down and cried for missing him. But what I can tell you, you can't see it, but I'm pointing at it right now. There's a photo on my wall of my father and me and my sister, who's estranged from our family. And I honor him still. I think about some of the good advice that he gave, which I was too young and too stupid to take. And it might be the same with your mom, Saya, but my dad told me once never to get into debt. And I did. And once I crawled out of it, the wisdom of that statement made perfect sense. And apart from my mortgage, I'm glad to say that I'm following his advice. Are there like things like that maybe even during the time that you're estranged from your mom that you thought, well, I guess she was right at least about this thing?
Yeah, she was right about a lot of things, which, you know, younger Saya never would have admitted, but I can say that now with much pleasure. The main lesson that she passed on to me, many lessons, but all fall under the umbrella of how important quality of life is and over everything else. We grow up defining quote unquote success to be the stereotypical condo and the spouse and the job title and the salary number and the fancy car, et cetera, et cetera. And if that is success to you, that's great, but that's not for me. And that absolutely was not for my mother. I really appreciate that I really appreciate now and did not realize what a gift it was that she gave me the say yes and figure it out later attitude that I have, and the don't spend time what ifing, just do it, whatever it is, and you'll figure it out. Just have confidence in yourself, confidence in your community. It'll work out somehow, because I see how many of my peers struggle, you know, at 30, 40, 50, 60 years old, struggle so much with knowing themselves and finding themselves and unable to move at all in life, which just breaks my heart, you know, that they're sitting stagnant on the sideline. So I absolutely attribute so much of my joy and where I am in life to my understanding that quality of life is also what's important to me, like it was to my mom. And to me, quality of life is not having a boss, not having to wear pants, not having a commute. I work from home, being able to go to Trader Joe's at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday morning, being able to go to yoga at noon on Wednesday, taking afternoon naps, watching trashy TV at whatever time of day I want. So basically all has to do with autonomy and freedom. And I get to do whatever I want, whenever I want. And my mom, I was definitely cut from the same cloth. My mom was the same way.
See, I'm like that, but my family was not like that at all. So I live that way, but I come from a family that does not like that.
I wish I had shown my mom more graciousness and appreciation for giving me this gift, because I can't imagine this not just being, that's just how life is. Like when people ask me, how did I become how I am? And I have trouble answering simple questions, because to me it's just like, that's just how life is. You do what you want and you don't worry what other people think, and you know, and for a lot of people that is not true.
How old are you now?
I'm 44.
And you've mentioned even in your talk that we saw that you're an entrepreneur. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Don't open that door. Yes, of course I want to talk about being yes, I love it. The thing I love, besides my husband, I guess, the thing I love most in the world is being an entrepreneur. Yeah, I got fired I had been in the real world for 4 years, and I got fired from my last 9-to-5 job in 2004. Had no clue what I wanted to do, but knew I didn't want a boss, and did know that certain things I really enjoyed. So I made a list. I'm a type A spreadsheet lover, list maker. So I made a list of all the things I wish I could get paid to do, no matter how ridiculous they sounded. And I didn't let those internal whispers of, Saya, you can never have a job doing that. I told them to shut up. And I said, let me just make this list. So things on the list were things like scrapbooking, making music mixes, making playlists, sitting on my couch in flip-flops and jeans, telling people all the like off the beaten path things to do in Chicago, playing board games, and on and on. So there are probably 25 things on this list. And again, most of them, like, you can't make a career out of playing board games on your couch and flip-flops. Long story short, yes, you can. That everything on that list, all 25 points, are what I do for a living today. And I'm actually, in October 1st, I will be celebrating 20 years of Mac and Cheese Productions, which is my company. And Mac and Cheese was born out of me feeling that adulting and all of the ways that we have to adult can be very difficult and challenging and awkward and painful and shameful, and that what a horrible life you're going to lead if that's what adulting is for you. So my mission with Mac and Cheese is to make adulting, to transform it from a negative thing to a positive thing. So it started out with, whenever I went to traditional networking events, or when I was single, when I went to traditional singles events, I would go and I immediately would regret going. Why didn't I just stay at home eating Ben and Jerry's straight out of a pint in my sweatpants? This is making me hate humanity. All of those events that where people are just like throwing business cards in your faces and everybody's like looking over your shoulder to see who better they can talk to. Everybody's wearing a mask. You don't feel like you can be yourself. We're trying to best each other, all of that. I was like, this can't be the rest of my life. So the first thing I started doing with Mac and Cheese was throwing events where out of my home, very comfy, warm vibe, everybody's in slippers. You can't be an asshat in slippers, I feel like. And the one caveat is that everybody comes by themselves on a Friday or Saturday night. Because I think when you go places with people you know, you often just stand in the corner and talk to them all night. They're your security blanket. So this way it levels the playing field. Everybody's the new kid. You don't have to worry about being the new kid. And it's just a way to expand your network and meet new people. And I'm a pretty good facilitator. I'm pretty good at making people feel comfortable in uncomfortable situations, like going to a random girl's home on a Friday night by yourself. And that's the first thing that I started doing with Mac and Cheese. And 20 years later, there's many more iterations, but they all fall under the umbrella of helping people connect to other people, helping people connect to opportunities, and helping people connect to themselves through what I would deem fun, playful, unique, creative
ways. So do you have events? Is that what, I mean, what, like, how would you categorize your business?
Yeah. Great question. Great question. Usually I tell people what I do and they're like, it sounds so wonderful. I still have no clue what you actually do, but it sounds cool. So, thank you for your follow-up question. Yeah, so they started off with events and over the years, and a variety of events. Those minglers that I just mentioned, one-off, just a few like hours on a Friday night. And that's actually how I met my husband. I met my husband in a mingler. And then I started adding more events. We kidnap you for the weekend and we take you to an adult sleepaway camp in an unknown location. You get in an unmarked van and you have to come by yourself. We take away your phone, unplug. So there's a lot of trust going on. Proud to say that zero death has occurred over the 20 years. Everybody has been returned home safely. The event that I became most well known for is my baby called Fear Experiment, where you sign up to learn an art form that scares you and that perhaps you're not the best at. And you could choose from improv, storytelling, dance, Broadway, or a cappella. And then you, again, have to sign up by yourself. You rehearse for 3 months with a group of other people who are also scared and bad at whatever the art form is. And then at the end, you perform in front of 700 people. So you get to be a rock star, meet new people, face fears, challenge yourself, etc. So lots of different events that, again, but are all have similar threads. And then over the years, I started adding more services, like I do one-on-one consulting and coaching now. I do a lot of like digital products to help people adult. I have an adulting kit. I have a speaker in the box. So for people who want to learn how to be a professional speaker, I actually have a cleaning service now. I have a cleaning crew. A few years ago, I got really tired of just sitting in front of the computer. So I just went to do what I like doing when I've been sitting in front of the computer, which is clean my home. I'm really good at it. It's meditative to me. I like doing something physical and something that's so obvious pre-Saya and post-Saya. And I was like, the only thing that would make this cleaning my home better is if I got paid. And I was like, I know my husband is not going to pay me to clean my own home, but that's a thing. So I'm a big, I just added cleaning to the branch, or it became a branch on the Mac and Cheese tree. So the Mac and Cheese tree is very random. The majority of my income right now comes from cleaning and from speaking and facilitation, usually corporate gigs where offices will bring us in to create a positive work culture. But then again, all the other events, and I'm attempting to write a book. And so I do all of the things. And this is why after 20 years, I still don't have an elevator pitch and people are still like, oh, I kind of get what she does, but I'm not exactly sure. So hopefully that gives you a gist of how I spend my days.
Yeah. You do what you want to.
Exactly. And you figure out how to get paid for it.
I always tell people, when people ask what I do, the short answer is I do what I'm good at. I do what I enjoy, and I do what people will pay me for. And it turns out that you can make a living taking the weird path. And, you know, I've never had a business plan, and I don't have an MBA. I don't have any type of certification. I had no clue what I was doing. But again, back to my mom, just like, just try it. Never once in my 44 years did she ever question me or make me feel that I couldn't do something. It was always like, yeah, just try it. You'll figure it out, and not that it necessarily that I was going to be the best at whatever it was, or that I was going to win or whatever, but it was just try it. And so again, just so much appreciation, because I absolutely would not be where I am personally or professionally had she not shown me what quality of life is and what living a fearless life is like.
It's a great story. It makes me think about my dad, because my dad was the classic, you are going to fail. What are you doing? You are doing it wrong. You are on the wrong path.
Did you internalize that? And did that impact you?
I internalized it, but I had to deal with that because I had to be an artist. I had to be. I was going to die otherwise. And I had to deal with it. One of the things I had to deal with, one of the main things was, like, being poor is one thing, but being ashamed of being poor is worse. Like, and even poor, like, what can I even say poor? I've been poor in my life, but I've never been, you know, desperate. I've never had to live on the street. I've always managed. I've also, and this isn't even because my parents said anything. My parents never said, never get into debt. But for some reason, I internalized this and had no desire to ever be in debt. Like, debt just seemed like a terrible idea to me. So I did not go into debt. But I lived within my means. Somehow I can do that and always have. And if that means renting a room with other housemates when I'm young, then that was fine. And I really wanted to do the art. So yeah, the hardest thing about it were these voices in my head telling me I was a failure. And I addressed that. And I did it anyway. But you can actually hear my dad's voice in my second feature film, which your mom probably saw, which is called Seder Masochism, because it's about Passover and my father, and there's recordings of him. So he was about as different from your mom as a parent could be, it sounds like.
Yeah.
But that said, I am grateful. He still had good qualities that I think about a lot, because he sort of represents the other side of adulting. So I love being an adult, and I always wanted to be an adult when I was a kid. I couldn't wait for it, because you get to make all these choices and no one else tells you what to do, and it's awesome. Mm-hmm. And when someone does tell me what to do, I resent them like crazy. But there are just things like, yeah, you know, like, I internalized this live within your means thing. That's great. I don't even know how, because it's not like he said it, but what he did say my whole childhood was, we can't afford it. We can't afford it. I was like, can I have this? No, we can't afford it. Can I have this? No, I can't. We can't afford it. And I learned later that we totally could have afforded these things.
It's the shame that, you know, yeah, the shame though, I, you know, and yeah, poor is so relative. That's definitely a narrative of my childhood, is growing up poor and single mom. And, you know, many memories of, I couldn't have what all my friends had. And I was weird, and for so many reasons, biracial and always bigger than people, weight wise, height wise, curly hair. Yeah, growing up in an apartment, not having a car, not having a microwave, not having a vacuum, not having all of the things, a couch, an armchair, the things that, Tupperware, I wanted Tupperware when I was little.
You used mason jars, right? You used glass jars.
Yeah, exactly, right? Right. Or like our bag, you know, like lunch baggies for us was, or for me, it was like, here's a grocery bag, throw your lunch in there, versus like the beautiful brown paper bag, the new paper, brown paper bags everybody else got. So, yeah, and just such shame at, you know, in elementary school, middle school, high school, when you feel the world is going to end if you're not like everybody else. And yeah, it's just, again, I wish that I had someone who was more, the transparent. I think that's why it's so important to be, you're not the only one. Why that's such a big part of my mantra these days. And speaking about like finances, that's such a, one of, I think, the biggest sources of shame that I see in my peers, in adults, is finance. And whether it's debt or whether it's just like, I don't know what a Roth IRA is, or I don't know how to invest, or, you know, that type of stuff. Like, and actually adulting in general, I feel like one of the biggest threads of shame is, I'm at a certain age or a certain point in my life and I haven't achieved this, or I don't know how to do this. And the shame that is attached to those feelings. So a big part of what motivates me is trying to undo that and tell people, like, you know, you're still a fabulous person, even if you don't know that dishwashers have filters that need to be cleaned.
They do?
Which I just learned a couple. Yes, I just learned this a couple years ago, Nina. They do. Actually, not every dishwasher has a filter, but a lot of dishwashers have filters, and I learned mine does, and had not been cleaned in the 7 years we've lived here, and it was disgusting. So if there's one takeaway from today, I hope everybody goes and checks your dishwasher and sees if it has a filter.
I don't want to.
Can we pause for just a couple of minutes? I have to go do something in the kitchen.
Corinna would have made my father proud. He has a stable job. He's a responsible homeowner. He's does all these adult things that I don't do.
No, so I abandoned the chance to have a family line, though, Nina. I would have been a failure.
Well, I did that too, but I never. There was just no question. I don't feel bad about it because I never wanted that. But you feel bad about it because you maybe did.
Well, you know, teenagers are not good at predicting the future, are they?
Saya, do you have children?
No, and don't want them. My husband and I have been together for, thank you for the thumbs up, Nina. My husband and I have been together for almost 10 years now. And it was actually a deal breaker for me when we met. If you didn't want kids pre us meeting, that I broke up with you because I absolutely knew 100% that I was having kids. And then when my husband and I met, my business was exploding. I loved the relationship between he and I. And it's only every single year that we've been together, my interest in having to think of someone else for the rest of their lives and not being able to have Saya time whenever I want it just has gotten less and less and less. So I am vehemently team no kids. So we foster puppies. That has become the best way for us to give back and to think about other beings in the world is fostering, because we foster these adorable puppies for 2-3 weeks. Then they get adopted. We take a break and we go travel and be spontaneous and spend superfluous money and superfluous things, and then foster again. We fostered 18 puppies. So those are our babies. We have a wall. We have a foster wall of our 18 babies from over the past few years.
Well, you two, I think, are going to be fast friends because Nina hates children. She, in fact, we saw a child the weekend before the last, and this poor, I think he was 3 years old. He got ice cream on his hands. And Nina leapt back from him as though he had leprosy.
And all over his face. I think I just took a look at him and I just laughed because he was, the previous scene with him was like, can we get ice cream? Can we get ice cream? And then I was all distracted. And then I just looked over at him and it was just ice cream everywhere.
That's one of the things I like about life, though, you know, for all that I am team no kids, that there's enough space in the world for you to do you and me to do me. And if you want to have kids, bless your heart. That's fabulous. And so it's not for me. It is not for me. And luckily not for my husband, because that would be a thing if he wanted them and
but
I didn't.
Corinna did this thing without even being asked. Corinna opened his man bag and pulled out a wet wipe, which he just happens to carry, and started wiping off the 3-year-old's face.
It's a smart idea to carry wet wipes with you. That's all I can say. It's practical.
It's practical.
And I'll tell you, Nina, you wouldn't understand this with your lady brain, but you should always pack your purse full of practical things.
Like tampons? Because you never know when a 3-year-old will need a tampon also.
Wet wipes. You know, what's funny is I was at a Goodwill a couple of weeks ago, and there was this man in front of me who was buying some widgety thing that was all taped together, and he couldn't untape it to ensure all the pieces were with this bundle. And it was sort of comical watching him try to tear this tape off. And I said, do you need a knife? And he's like, oh, do you have one? And I said, of course. And I felt like this sort of contempt because I was like, what is a man doing in public without a pocket knife? Like, now, Saya, you teach people how to be adults. That's a beautiful knife.
I am holding up my, I went through all my mom's things with her death and she always had a pocket knife. And so, yeah, it's just so funny that you say that. So, and definitely was of the mindset of like, how could you not carry a pocket knife? Yeah, so.
Exactly. Like it's mind boggling.
I can tell you how.
They're so useful.
I carried a pocket knife and then I flew and they took it away from me and threw it out.
Well, I'll tell you what I got in the mail today, and I'm not making this up, but I have my knives confiscated by the TSA occasionally as well. And these are tiny little pocket knives. And not only have your knives been confiscated, Nina, and my knives, but hundreds and thousands of other travelers. And so I went on eBay and found one of these people who buys all of these knives from the TSA and recycles them. And I got a set of 10 replacement little pocket knives so that I don't have to try to remember to remove my pocket knife before going to the airport now. I can just be like, bah, all right, when I get home, I'll get another pocket knife. It's like I could build a little dispenser, has a little lever, put a little lever in it and just press the lever and have a knife pop out.
I always wondered what TSA did with all their confiscated items. They still have a bottle of my champagne. I got one of my first speaking gigs. I got a bottle of champagne from Eventbrite. I was keynoting for them at a conference and stupid me brought it to the airport to fly home with. And they took my champagne. And I still remember that. And I wonder, what do they do with everything?
I'm sure they emptied it down the sink and disposed of the glass safely. I'm sure that's probably what happened. It's our government. They wouldn't do anything improper with it.
Absolutely not.
I feel like I don't know if I'm adulting right or wrong, Saya, but I feel like having a backup supply of the important things, that's the way that you do it. Is if you need something bad enough that you need one of it, you need it bad enough that you need two of it.
So I'm glad you said two, though, because my speaking of adulting and the unfun aspect of it, we unfortunately had a sewage backup incident a few months ago at our home, and we're in a condo. I won't get into the disgusting details, but you can imagine sewage backing up out of every single hole of your home and having to replace wood floor and drywall and et cetera, et cetera. So I've been trying to find the silver lining. That's usually what I do, is I try to find silver lining and all of the things, the horrible things in life. And so we had to do a lot of like reorganization and just getting rid of stuff, et cetera. And I am also someone who believes in having backups, but I don't stop at two, especially thinking of like cleaning supplies. It makes me feel so good to have 20 rolls of toilet or of paper towels or 5 bottles of Swiffer wet jet juice. And with our reorganization, we lost a lot of storage and we started getting rid of stuff, and it felt so surprisingly positive to me to get rid of stuff and to no longer have the mindset of, I still like having a backup, but I don't need multiple backups. And we went shopping at Costco the other day, and it was such a different and pleasurable experience to be, no, I actually do not need those 24 XYZs. That is not a part of my life anymore. So I'm all for the backups, but within reason.
Just the essentials.
Yeah,
I think I have 20 bars of chocolate in my freezer because I ran out once and I couldn't face a world where I didn't at least have a couple months supply of chocolate on hand. But that's not with everything. Let me ask a question though, and I want to be delicate here because this is the first time that we've talked. You might not know all of the stuff that we talk about, but one of the things that we're interested in is all the gender stuff that's going on, particularly with young people right now. And given that you help people to get into adulthood, I'm curious to see if you've noticed a phenomenon that I have, and if you have, what your viewpoint on it is. And I don't think it's just the young people that have gender identities. I think it goes beyond that. But I've noticed that I'm going to say up to age 26 now, 26, 27, maybe 28, that I'm learning of more and more young adults who just don't seem to be able to launch into adulthood. Some of them live at home still. If they don't, then they've got housemates. It's not necessarily because they couldn't afford to live by themselves, but it's like they need that extra security blanket. They're very into cartoons or other sorts of fandoms that they picked up in their teenage years, but are just continuing forward. And I'm wondering, are we having a sort of crisis among the Gen Z people, where they get to their adult years, but they can't figure out how to start careers or start families or start to transition towards more adult pursuits?
That's an interesting question that I have not been asked before. I'm not sure what my answer would be. I think that I feel like with social media, so I'm not someone who just shits on social media. I think that social media can be wonderful in many ways, and I use it often and has brought much goodness to my life. The flip side of that is, and I think going to your question, I'm so grateful that I did not grow up with social media because of the whole comparison factor and how bad it can make you feel. And you know, the whole everybody shows their highlight reel on social media and doesn't show the shit reel, right? And so you're comparing yourself to a life usually that's not a whole life. It's just the social media life. And so just to your point, I feel like younger folks are, partly because of social media, are more likely to, give up is the right phrase. Like it's very easy for them to try something and give it up with that. I feel like older generations, we would stick with something more. And I think a lot of it was social media of like, oh, well, it's so easy for this person. Like when they started their career, they got this, this, and this right away. And I didn't. So I'm going to quit this job. It's not for me. And I'm going to try this other thing. And everybody, you know, it's so easy for all these other folks. And so, I feel like they just don't give enough time. They give up too easily on a lot of things. And this, you know, gross generalization, and not everybody, but yeah. So that's one of the things I've noticed. And just speaking to your point about like living at home and like not being grown ass adults, even though the number, your age number says you should probably be a grown ass adult at age, you know, 23, 24, whatever. I feel, that they often are not as willing to like DIY. So like they just want the easy route, I guess. The easy route, which is often not the stereotypical adulty route to take. So yeah, I don't know. It's a fabulous question. Tangents, wandering, because I don't really know the answer to that. But those are some of the things I've noticed over the
what
years.
What age range are the people that come to your events?
Great question. I've had as young as 17 did one of my offerings, and as elder as 65, but people tend to follow whatever age I'm at. So most of the people in my world right now are middle-aged folks. And speaking of gender, Mac and Cheese has always skewed heavily female. I think a lot of it has to do with the let's be vulnerable and share emotions. And that tends to attract usually that sex rather than the other sex.
This is a non sequitur, but I do believe, Corinna, that you and I met Debbie. Yes.
Did we?
I believe she was at the panel that we went to.
Urbana.
The Urbana Free Library panel.
We probably did. And there were like so many people that I was meeting that day. It's hard to track everybody.
How many years ago was that?
That was 2019.
4 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was a very fraught event, but we were glad for anybody that came to show support.
What was the event and what was the fraughtness?
Oh, it was a panel. What was the title of it? Is Sex Real? Something like that. It was a panel of me, the TERF, Corinna, the tranny, and
Carrie
Callahan, who was a detransitioner.
The detransitioner.
And we had this panel because one of my films had been banned. That was right around the time I was getting canceled. It was a few months after this campaign against me started in my town, where people were saying I was a transphobic bigot and also like white supremacist and eugenicist, like all this crazy stuff. And people were actually believing it.
It was called Does Sex Matter?
Yeah. And Corinna was like, let's do something for your community to calm this down. Let's have a panel so that we can all talk about this. And we created the panel. And what happened was the people that were canceling me immediately made a counter event to protest it. And
in the same place.
An anti-trans thing. And but fortunately, it was well attended by some interesting folks, including your mom. Meanwhile, the counter event, the protest thing, was even more attended by people, including one person who said he wanted to kill me. I just cannot believe how much my town has lost its mind. I'm not going to get over that. I don't think, maybe ever. Maybe I will. I'd like to.
Sai, your mom was one of these people who's always calling other people to stand up and be courageous about what they think. So that's probably how we fell into a similar set of interests.
Yeah. She, I think, giving voice to the voiceless or those who maybe have a voice but very soft-spoken was very important to her over the years. So, and then that was, you know, that's always one of the bittersweet things about funerals and memorials is one of my strongest feelings these days, or that day at her memorial, was I just wish she could have been there to hear how loved she was, because the last few years of her life were filled with her questioning if she had made any impact on anyone or anything, and feeling that all of her life had been a waste. And, you know, it just breaks my heart that I had this outpouring of notes and texts and phone calls. And then at the memorial, people saying the one most wonderful things of how they impact. And some of the stories I knew, and many of the stories I didn't know, and I had no clue the reach of her impact. So it's just someone said something that stuck with me about that we should live for our eulogies instead of our resumes, right? The things that you want said about you in your eulogy, that's what you should be thinking about today. And that's what should be your North Star and your compass today. And what directs you, rather than living for your resume, which usually stereotypically, again, directs you to the corner office and the salary and all of that. It was, again, bittersweet. I hope she knows. I hope at the end she knew that she did make an impact in so many ways, but that was one of the things, I think one of the hardest things for me at the end was thinking that potentially she could have died thinking that nobody loved her and that she had made no impact.
I think she had very high ambitions. Like, she really did seem to want to save the world. And by that standard, yeah, I could imagine being disappointed, because we can't save the world.
Yeah. So I hope, you know, she made so much, there's so many small things that she did. And when you add them all up to just this glorious, beautiful, random smorgasbord of impact, you know, a lot of, unfortunately for someone who didn't like money at all, so much of it was tied to money, that her last years were so stressful. She got evicted.
She was
being taken to court, and because she couldn't pay her rent anymore, you know, she asked for help over. And that was actually one of the main reasons for my estrangement and her whole family, it wasn't just me that was estranged from her, it was her whole family. It was, a lot of it was tied to money, and that when I didn't agree and other family members didn't agree that just because a family member asks for money, that you should give it to them. I did not agree with how she was living her life in various ways. And, you know, and I'm also not a millionaire. You know, I work really hard for my money. And if I don't, and so there is just so much complicatedness there, right? Of like, your mom's getting evicted and you're not helping her. You know, your mom asked for money and you're not just going to give it to her because it's your mom. It's like, no, like I, you know, speaking of boundaries, that was one of my boundaries I had to create, is like, I, just because it's a family member doesn't mean it's unconditional love. And it's really hard, especially I'm at an age now at 44, where so many of my friends are losing, have lost their parents and would give anything for five more minutes. And when my mom was alive and living 20 minutes away from me, and I didn't see her for talk to her for, you know, 5 years, part of me just felt so horrible. Again, just that comparison thing. Like, I shouldn't compare me and my friend to my friends and what they're going through with their parents, but we're also human and that's what you do. And so part of me just felt so, like, such a horrible daughter, a horrible human being, because I didn't unconditionally love my mom, because I didn't stop an eviction happening when she reached out when she was sick. I didn't automatically drop everything and go. So, I mean, that was kind of the gist of my eulogy. The eulogy started that she called me and asked me to come up to Evanston, which is just about 20 minutes away. And I said no for various reasons. I won't get into various reasons, but, and I chose to watch The Real Housewives of New Jersey instead. And that was the last that she died 2 days later. So, you know, just, yeah, I will always feel horrible that I chose trashy TV over my mom. But, you know, I hope she knows that she did a good job and that I loved her, even though it wasn't perfect.
About 20 years ago, I'm in Indianapolis now, but about 20 years ago, I moved back to Reno, Nevada, and I had very cleverly taken my college fund when I was a teenager and used it for a sex change instead of college. So I got to about 30 years old, and I thought I'd go back to Reno, reconnect with my family a little bit, because I'd been mostly estranged from my family at that point. And I lived with my mom for about the first year. And when I lived with her, I thought, we're both adults now. I don't need her for anything. I have my own money. I'm going to stay at her house because it's close to the university and that's convenient. And now that we're both adults, we can get to know each other like we're adults. We can have an adult relationship. And I'll tell you two things. The first is, I don't know if it's just me and my mom, but I think that this is more or less universal. If you're somebody's child, you can never have a relationship with them like an adult. They are always going to see you as the babe, the swaddling babe, whose butt they and barf they had to clean up. And there's always that sort of helplessness and even uselessness that I think most moms anyway are going to look at their kids with. This led to a lot of conflicts just in 1 year, a lot of conflicts between my mom and I, because she wanted to control the things that I was doing. She has like a very high threshold for what she considers standard of cleanliness, which is like daily vacuuming of the whole house, and it just like very, very high. And I was like, I'm just going to keep my own area the way that I want to. And that caused a lot of stress with her as well. And I was like, I was 30, I'm like, when am I going to be adult enough that you treat me like I'm an adult? And it was horrible because I realized that the answer is never. And it's still like that. This is 20 years later. I'm doing a number of things in my life that are fairly unusual or fairly extraordinary. And to her, it's just the same as if I'd drawn a dinosaur in crayon and she put it up on the refrigerator. it's very crushing in a lot of ways that the accomplishments, I don't want to be too proud of my own self, but it's crushing in some ways that the accomplishments in my life really do not seem to, like, she's proud of me in an abstract way, but she's not proud of me in a specific way. And that kind of hurts. This other thing that I wanted to mention, 1 year at Thanksgiving, and I think this is when I was living with her. She had a few, we were preparing Thanksgiving dinner. She had had a few glasses of wine and was not sober at all. And she slashed her hand open, and bad enough that it should have required stitches, probably 2 or 3 stitches. And she was bleeding all over the kitchen and insisting on finishing making the dinner. And it was this bloody horror that was happening. And through the course of that meal, the dishes that I made, she destroyed in a way that was plausibly an accident, but was specifically destroying the stuff that I had prepared for the dinner. I just had so much hatred and resentment for her specifically at that moment. And I think that that's just part of the relationship of when you're an adult and you have your relationship with your mom. It's not between peers. And even what you were explaining leading up to that last night that you were talking about, there's a point where you just can't help somebody, because if it were like your loved one were like a puppet or a marionette and you could grab the strings and the bars and move them, you'd be able to help them. That's not how people are. And you have to realize at some point that you have to give up helping them, because you can't make them do the right things.
Yeah. And especially my mom, you could not make her do anything she didn't want to do. So absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And another weird thing with death is the money. I didn't realize how expensive death is, meaning, you know, paying for obituaries and funerals and cremation, you know, all of that stuff. And another weirdness to this has just been my mom obviously, you know, being evicted, and she had no money, and some, you know, a little, some debt. So basically, you know, I had to pay when she died for XYZ, and the horribleness of being envious of friends of mine whose, you know, parents left them something. They have inheritance. They got a house out of it. I got nothing. And I hate that it's still today. I have anger over that. And, you know, not obviously directed at my friends, but it's just a weird, money in general is weird. And then you add it to losing. Yeah. It's just, money is a weird thing. Death is a weird thing, but I'm glad that it seems like we're all on the same page that talking about this stuff makes it less, I don't know, less weird, but just you feel less alone, that we're all weirdos together.
I can't imagine. Can you imagine, just for a minute, imagine that there's like our perfect friends who have the perfect relationships with their parents, and everything looks like it's out of a 1980s sitcom. Can you imagine what the sitcom version of the funeral is? There's like the tender moments, like the hugs, the clean linens, no dust. There's no dirty dishes, nothing, like all of the things that would burden the family after the death are just not present in those 1980s sitcom families. But I don't think families like that actually exist. I think everybody has things in their closet that a family member has to deal with.
But people try very hard to make it seem like that.
Oh, yeah. It's the front.
I remember when I was going to junior high, which was a nightmare, and my mom said, it's a terrible time. Everyone is miserable and pretending they're really happy. And the rest of life is like that too. Although I have to say, there are a lot of people who do not have my needs for or interest in transparency and honesty. And I sometimes wonder, especially as I get older, because I'm less sensitive as I get older. I'm less raw. So I'm less feely than when I was younger. And I can totally believe that there are people that just, they just have the volume down on their emotional lives. And it might actually not be like abnormal. They might not be super lying to themselves or anything like that. They might not be anything like me and have, you know, some horrible trauma that they're in denial of and it's coming out in weird ways. They might just have like a low volume setting on all of that stuff. I'm not like that. But I think people might be.
Do you find, one of the things I'm fascinated with is who, making friends as an adult, because it can be a very difficult thing to do. So I was just curious if you can pinpoint what you gravitate to when you know you found your people and when you feel comfortable and you know you want a relationship.
Yeah.
What do you gravitate to?
Well, okay. So a great way to make friends, also a great way to lose friends, and then make better friends is to come out as gender critical at a time when people will call you a bigot and a transphobe. So
becoming a lightning rod, Nina.
Just tell the truth. Tell some unpopular truth. Stand up for yourself and for reality. And you will lose a bunch of friends. And you will find other friends who are very awesome. So that is how I made my friends. Was by becoming a lightning rod. And it was very traumatic. And I didn't do it on purpose. And I was shocked by how vicious people were. But a consequence of this is I have all these women reached out to me privately while I was being publicly pilloried as a witch. And yeah, as a consequence of this, I started having these meetups with other women and I love them.
Love that.
I think everybody should try to become an object of public controversy.
Derision and,
you know,
scorn. Yeah. Now, people should just tell the truth. Cowardice is so widespread right now, and it's so appalling, and it's so destructive. And there's an upside to it. But on the other hand, I have, you know, PTSD or just plain old TSD, because the traumas can be ongoing. But yeah, you meet really interesting people when you live authentically, and authentic does not mean pretending to be someone you're not. That's not what authentic means. Telling the truth, though, that is authentic and taking risks and being brave. And if you do that, you're going to have more interesting friends for sure.
And Nina, where are you?
I live in Urbana, Illinois.
Okay. So Indianapolis and Urbana. Have you been in Urbana for a long time?
I was born and raised here. I left when I was 20. I wanted to be a new age crystal wielding hippie. So I went to Santa Cruz, California. After 3 months, I realized I was not a hippie. I was a contrarian. And there's a big difference. So when I was surrounded by hippies, I did not want to be a hippie. But when I was surrounded by conservative people and Christians, I did want to be a hippie. Anyway, I learned that the hard way. And then I lived in Austin, Texas briefly, San Francisco for 11 years, Trivandrum, India for 3 months. I was expecting it to be a year. New York City for 10 years. And then my dad died and I started dating somebody that lived in my hometown. I'd been visiting because while my dad was dying, and my mom was active and healthy. And I thought, I'm going to move home and spend time with my mom while she's active and healthy to see what that's like. And I did. And now she's not active and healthy anymore. I mean, she is. She's great for an 82-year-old, but 82 and 70, there's a big difference between those ages, and it is long overdue her moving to the independent living place. Yes, and I've gotten a nice glimpse of what will happen to me if I should live that long. Only I do not have her money and I will not be able to move to the fancy geezer place when it's my time, if the world is even still here.
I learned the term SNF. I did not know what that meant. Skilled nursing facility, which is for people who are like my mom, who had no money and nowhere to go. Family wouldn't claim them, so to speak. And yeah, it's she was there for 3-4 months, I think. And, you know, I mean, actually, there were a lot of positive things. The staff there overall, you know, was wonderful. The nurses. And but yeah, it's just going. I also went to visit a very wealthy relative who lived in a $10,000 a month, you know, living assisted living plan. Just, yeah, the stark is just the difference is mind blowing. It really is.
Yeah. I will say that I am so grateful that my mom is solvent. I know so many people whose parents are not, and that places such a burden on the kids. And not only is my mom solvent, but also her father died of Alzheimer's, a long, slow decline. And she was just adamant about not putting her kids through anything like what she went through. So she made all these plans long ago, financial plans and end of life plans and age care plans and various insurances. So all of her affairs are in order, which is great because I cannot deal with that stuff.
It's a gift. That's such a, I think it's one of the best gifts you can give loved ones is to have all your affairs in order. And yeah, my husband and I have, if I die, spreadsheets with probably 25 tabs of how to find passwords to this and what a bank account, all of that, what credit cards to close. It's such a gift. And I think too, just going back to like talking about having like backups of stuff and living like a minimalist versus maximalist life, that stuff too, that physical stuff, like what a burden that can be on kids or who the loved ones who have to deal with it. And I am, and that was another thing, silver lining. I was appreciative that my mom for the most part was pretty minimalist and not, and very uncomplicated, you know, and not, I guess a positive of having no money is, and no siblings, like there's no fighting over, you know, there was no Ferrari and boat and how and real estate to fight over. It was $75 in the bank account that I got because I'm the only child. So, but just the so that I, it was so time consuming and emotionally draining to deal with the stuff that she did have. And she lived in a tiny one room coach house that had basically nothing. So I just can't imagine. And she did, she prepped for a year, like giving away stuff and tried very much not to be a burden on me, material wise. And so I really, that's another thing I appreciate and definitely hope that I follow suit as far as needing, you know, having all those plans in place and taking care of stuff before, it's left for someone else to take care of.
Yeah. When I think about my death, it's like, I don't have kids. I'm not married. I don't expect to be. In fact, I'm not going to. And it's like, who's my loved ones? I don't know who my loved ones are. I don't know if I'm going to have any.
You need to put together a trust fund for your cats, Nina.
They're going to die before me.
You'll have other cats at some point.
Yeah. I don't think they know how to handle that stuff. Now I just...
Make me the executor. And I'll look after your cats.
Okay. See, Corinna's my loved one. He'll be the executor of my will.
I mean, I'll look after your cats anyway.
And he'll look after my cats. Whatever cats I happen to have then.
And if that's not friendship, I don't know what is.
But yeah, I do wonder about this because there's supposed to be, you know, the person in your life. Usually it's a kid or it's a partner, spouse. It's like, I have people, I might have different people at that time. It's just going to be whoever's there. Hard to plan for that.
It is. Yeah. And another kind of like, it's interesting to think about of, you know, like, who do you call if some, you know, who's the first person that you reach out to if a disaster happens, if you're in the hospital and you need someone to do something, you know, it's just an interesting tool of reflection, I think. What happened? It came up when the sewage thing happened, and my husband and I were talking about who we should give keys to in our neighborhood, or like who do we trust with keys? And also, if we can't live at home because of whatever reason, sewage backup, that, you know, who would we ask? Can we stay on your couch or in your guest room? Like, and just going through that list, and like the list today, so different from the list 5 years ago, so different from the list 10 years ago. And it was really eye-opening too, both in good ways and bad ways.
Yeah. That's the thing about family. Like family, maybe you can't stand them. Maybe they're awful. Maybe they've even been abusive, but there's a bond there, a primal bond that lasts. Mm-hmm. Unlike friends, who can be much more awesome, but without the longevity of those bonds.
Your mileage may vary, Nina.
I hope so.
Isaiah, for anyone who's in your area, you're up in Chicago?
I am.
If they're looking for any sort of event facilitation, they can go to your website. What is that?
Yeah, it's macandcheeseproductions.com. And honestly, my mom did not think about Google when she named me 44 years ago. I am very Googleable, yeah. And she didn't think about privacy at all. If you just Google Saya and Mac and Cheese, Saya Chicago, my SEO is fabulous. The first two pages will be links about me. So I am not hard to find. But yeah, macandcheeseproductions .com is the place to go. And yeah, I'm in Chicago, but you know, with the state of the world, both virtual and also we travel all the time for all of the things that we do. So even folks outside of Chicago, if learning how to live a fulfilled, simple, easy, fun adulting life sounds appealing to you in all of the ways, whether it's at work or personally, and whether it's romantic or social, spiritually, all of the ways, that the mac and cheese community is, I know I'm biased, but it's a pretty fabulous community, and it's filled with people from all walks of life. Everybody is so different from one another, but the common thread of people wanting to lean yes as opposed to lean no, and to try things and to experience life, the successes and the failures, and people who believe that movement forwards or backwards is better than remaining still. And that, again, that your flaws and your mistakes are not things to be ashamed of, but potentially to share and to spotlight and to turn, you know, negative into positive. So, you know, the main, our, as I mentioned earlier, my main bread and butter these days is my speaking and facilitation gigs, and also my passive income, all my digital products that people can buy. So various ways to be in my world. And also I very much TMI, especially on Instagram. So, and my newsletter, which goes out once a month, and my Instagram, if you're, and I don't have a thing that I talk about. I talk about all of the things: cleaning, living your best life, travel hacks, very strong opinions on stupid things that don't matter at all, but I have strong opinions that I need to share. So if any of that sounds appealing, I invite you to be in my world.
Is it free to sign up for your newsletter?
It is free. Right. Yes. That was something that's been very important to me over the years, is I love money. I love making money. But as someone who grew up without any money and didn't get to do a lot of cool things in life because of money, that I wanted to find a balance of having things that are free and $5 and $15, and having things that are $10,000 and $25,000, and something for everybody. So yes, accessibility hopefully is there, and being inclusive is important to me. And I hope I do that in all of the ways.
Well, thank you to helping us honor your mother and our dearly departed listener. Not only do we miss her wisdom and her feedback, but it also hurt to have 10% of our listeners disappear in one go. So appreciate you being
with me. I know she would be so tickled that I'm here with you. So I so much appreciate the invite. If for nothing other than, yeah, making Debbie Lynn squee wherever she is. I know she would she pinch herself. I don't think she would believe that I'm a guest on your podcast. So thank you for having
me. Awesome. It's been great talking to you, Saya.
All right. Well, TERFs and trannies, thank you for joining us for another episode of Heterodorks.
And I didn't get to say TERFs and trannies at the beginning. So bye, TERFs and trannies.
Bye-bye.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to Heterodorks. You can support us by visiting our page at anchor.fm/heterodorks or by supporting Nina Paley at patreon.com/Nina Paley. You can also support us by writing a review on your favorite podcast site, such as Apple Podcasts. Thank you.